Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would like to reserve 3 minutes just in case you want.
Your yellow light will go on when you hit the 3 minutes, but you will be responsible for keeping track of that. I'll try to remind you if you start to leak into it.
Yes.
But you may begin whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, this is Calvin Butcher versus Commonwealth. It's a case involving the Virginia hit-and-run statute and whether or not the evidence was sufficient at trial to show that Mr. Butcher failed to comply. And one of the things that makes this statute somewhat unique, although in some ways it's similar in nature to the sex offenders statute, the Commonwealth has to prove negative. Normally where the Commonwealth has to prove what a defendant did, in the case of the hit and run, they have to prove what he failed to do. Yes, Your Honor, so you have a question.
Just some housekeeping to make sure that we're all focused on the same thing.
Yes,
the question, he was in an accident that falls within the ambit of the statute.
No question.
No question that he had a duty under the statute to stop immediately stop as close to the scene of the accident without obstructing traffic, and the evidence seems to indicate he did that.
Yes, Your Honor.
He then had to report his name, address, driver's license number, and vehicle registration number to either state police, local law enforcement, or the driver of the car.
Actually, I agree with the Commonwealth that the duty is in the conjunctive, but when he has to report it, it is essential.
Let me ask you a question about that.
Yes, Judge.
The old Banks case says conjunctive, but the statute has been amended since then. Where is the conjunctive in the current statutory language? Because it looks like to me an or, and the Supreme Court has at least acknowledged it in a case not directly touching the issue that doing one of the things is sufficient.
I would have to tell the court that I did not see that an amendment. I did not read the statute as it currently reads. I was reading the statute as it was presented in the briefs, and I assume it was. I do not know when the amendment occurred, Your Honor, so I'm not prepared to answer that.
All right.
But either, I'm sorry, which?
I guess then, even if he had to report to both, the statute has a fail-safe that if it is impossible, and I take it your argument is given that she drove off, we don't know what he would have actually said to her. She made it impossible to report it to her.
Yes, Your Honor, at the scene. And as the case law has said, the gravamen, or the basic purpose of the statute, is to keep individuals involved in accidents from avoiding civil or criminal liability. So one of the things that makes this somewhat unique is the driver of the injured vehicle leaving the scene, which certainly raises a question of whether or not she was available for purposes of the statute, since the statute does mention that the driver, if available, or to report it to some other responsible person, which our contention would be that by contacting her father subsequently, since he was the owner of the vehicle, would at least be an attempt to make contact, to take responsibility. The evidence from the testimony was that he even offered to pay half. I'm sure there was question of, well, who's paying the other half? But there was an offer of exchange of funds, and I think that's where this becomes problematic with regard to the proof of the negative. The Commonwealth failed to answer questions. They showed what he did, but they failed to answer the questions. Well, did he provide you with a driver's license number? Did he provide you with a VIN number?
Did they ask, what did he say?
I think it was more of a general question, and then I think Mr. Pegram, the father of Ms. Pegram, the owner of the vehicle, indicated that Mr. Butcher offered, he's the one to whom the offer to pay half was made. And they were having a conversation, and during the conversation, apparently Mr. Butcher wanted to speak about the relationship, and Mr. Pegram, at that point, didn't want to talk about the relationship. He's just concerned about how the car is going to get fixed. But the Commonwealth has the duty of proving each and every element. This is not a statute that has an affirmative defense. At some point, if the Commonwealth puts on what might be a prima facie case, then of course the defendant may fall to having the burden of going forward with the evidence. So if it's denied that he provided that information, then he has some record that he can produce.
On brief, there's an argument that even though the officer who responded to the accident scene,
yes, sir,
indicates that he received no information that any attempt was made to contact, he was not contacted as law enforcement.
That is correct, Your Honor, but he is a single officer.
We're right. And it appears that the argument is it's not a reasonable inference that if law enforcement was contacted, somehow that would be routed to the responding officer. If that argument is correct, then
yes,
if you're right, then to prove this charge, the Commonwealth would have to call all 6,000 Virginia State Police employees and put them on the stand, wouldn't they?
No, Your Honor. I believe it would be very similar to the way failure to register for sex offender registry is proven. They have a custodian show up with testimony that they have searched the records and found no record of a registration. They could have called a custodian of the records from the Petersburg Police Department.
But there's a difference, because a registration requires me to file a piece of paper, so there would be a piece of paper. We don't have the piece of paper. The reporting statute just says that I told a state that I have to give this information to a member of state police or local law enforcement, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you wouldn't be arguing that the state police said, if you told it to somebody and they created no piece of paper that created a record, would the statute be satisfied?
I'm sorry.
If your client had called a state trooper,
yes, Your Honor,
and said, and gave them all the information, and the state trooper did not write it down, would he have satisfied the statute?
I think in those circumstances, you would be at the point where the Commonwealth would already have established there was no record of any report having been made, which would, in my opinion, be a prima facie case, and then that would be where I would suggest that the burden would shift to the defendant to go forward with the evidence. Still doesn't have the burden of proof, but if the Commonwealth establishes, at least from the records they can provide, there was no report made by the driver that was involved in the accident.
How is that conceptually different than the responding officer who one would assume if anybody called in about that accident would be contacted, saying, I never received any indication that he contacted anybody?
I think that's a big assumption. It's a leap that one cannot make. Or perhaps if the evidence in this case went beyond the question, well, did he ever call you, when the Commonwealth attorney asked Officer Compere, did you ever receive a call, did he ever talk to you, and the answer was no, the Commonwealth could have, assuming he would have been qualified to testify about the records, also compared, did you check with the department to see if there was ever any report made? Yes, I did. Did you find a report? No, I did not. That, at least for the sake of argument in this case, since it didn't happen, I would concede might satisfy the element. There has to be some evidence presented. In this case, there was no evidence presented as to why Officer Compere would know if a report was made to the police department. No questions were asked. It is our position that the record is devoid of evidence that would support the proof of the element of failing to report to law enforcement. So, assuming that the duty is in the conjunctive, then the question is, did the Commonwealth present evidence sufficient to prove that he failed to report to Ms. Pegram or her father, which our contention is her father would be the next available responsible person. Since the questions were not asked about what information he did or did not provide, and the Commonwealth has the burden of proving those elements, it's our contention that the evidence is insufficient. It clearly was sufficient based on the court's findings that there was property damage. And that matter is not before the court today. It was appealed, but it was denied. So the only question is, on this particular charge, did the Commonwealth present evidence that's sufficient And while it certainly raises suspicions, the inferences are not enough to get beyond a reasonable doubt. Right. Any questions? I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
You may.
May it please the Court, David Uberman on behalf of the Commonwealth.
Mr. Uberman, I'm guessing you have anticipated my first question.
I have, Your Honor.
My first question.
Yes, sir.
Where's the and in the current version of the statute that makes it in the conjunctive?
Your Honor, the way I had read the statute was that the 46.2-894 requires that anyone involved in an accident has to report the information you specified, name, address, phone number, vehicle registration, to local or state law enforcement, comma, to the person struck and injured, if that person is capable of understanding, and there is an or there, or to the driver or some other occupant of the vehicle collided with, or to the custodian of other damaged property. I had read that and Banks together. Banks, of course, interpreted the predecessor to current code
that had
section
an
46.2. I was not aware of that distinction. I apologize to the Court for that. That's the case. The Commonwealth's belief that the statute was written in the conjunctive. In this case, I don't think it expressly matters. And the Court has mentioned that there is Supreme Court case law stating that either is sufficient. In this case, even assuming it's disjunctive or that it is, in fact, disjunctive, here Mr. Butcher was required to then have done one of several things that are set forth in the statute. In this case, he did none of those things. What he did was run his girlfriend off the road as they traveled at 60 miles an hour. After running her off the road, he approached her vehicle, yelling. He started banging on her driver's side window. Mr. Butcher has tried to characterize this as an attempt, at least on brief, to provide Ms. Pegram with the information required under the statute.
What does the Commonwealth have to show to prove that whatever he was yelling wasn't his VIN number?
Well, Your Honor, I think that in this case, that the trial court can make a reasonable inference that given the fact that he had just, again, run his girlfriend off the road at 60 miles an hour, was screaming at her, and then was angrily pounding his fist, that the information he wasn't giving was his registration number or his VIN. Under those circumstances, Ms. Pegram, clearly the Commonwealth concedes she left the scene, but she left the scene and she testifies that she was afraid of serious bodily injury, and rightfully so. She'd just been run off the road, and there was an angry man banging on her window. The evidence simply does not support any inference that Mr. Butcher at any point provided this information, the statutory required information.
What do we do with the notify state police or local law enforcement? Because there is the logical impossibility of proving the negative short of calling, well, everybody meeting that description and having him saying he didn't call me.
Correct, Your Honor.
How do we handle that?
Well, and again, Your Honor, I think that in this case, it's just a reasonable inference based upon what the officer testified to. On page 50 of the appendix, the officer says he was never contacted by Mr. Butcher. And I think the trial court was entitled to make a reasonable inference that the investigating officer assigned to this case, that any call to local law enforcement, to state law enforcement, eventually would have been routed to him or he would have been made aware of it. And the fact that he testified that he was never contacted by Mr. Butcher, that indicates that Mr. Butcher simply never contacted the state or local police under those circumstances. So in this case, we know for a fact Mr. Butcher doesn't provide that information to Ms. Pegram at the scene of the collision. I don't think that the phone call later to her father is of any distinction. He doesn't provide that information then. He offers to pay for half of an accident.
What of the argument that Mr. Pegram was never asked, did he tell you any of this information?
Again, Your Honor, he was never asked that on cross-examination either. And again, in this case, it was the Commonwealth's burden to prove that Mr. Butcher did not provide the information at the scene of the accident. That phone call to Mr. Pegram occurred at approximately 1 o'clock in the morning the following day. It occurred hours after the fact.
So even if he had given all the information, it's the Commonwealth's position to Mr. Pegram, it doesn't matter.
It would have been too late at that point. What the statute requires is at the scene of the collision that information has to be provided to the party of the driving the car that was struck.
Mr. Uberman, do we know what the circumstances were that led to the investigating officer to be on the scene in this case? whether he happened to be riding down the road or was he dispatched or?
He received a phone call, I believe, from the after the accident. Miss Pegram, the victim, drove to her father's home. It was as she proceeded to her father's home that eventually Mr. Butcher broke off and stopped following her. She told her father what happened. Together, they made a phone call to the police, and then they met the officer at the police headquarters, and that's how the officer became involved. After that, the officer came back to the scene, took photographs of the scene. Those were admitted into evidence. But to answer the court's question, that's how the officer became involved in the matter. And again, in this case, the trial court was entitled to make the reasonable inference that the officer's testimony, again, that he never received any information from Mr. Butcher is sufficient under the statute, disjunctively or not. And again, the Commonwealth apologizes for representing that.
I may be wrong. Everybody else tells me it's conjunctive. So,
Banks certainly says it's conjunctive, Your Honor. And the way I had read the statute, it was a good faith belief that it was, in fact, conjunctive. But assuming for the purposes of argument that it is disjunctive, I think Mr. Butcher still fails because he can't establish either that he provided the statutory mandated information to Ms. Pegram, the victim, or that he provided it to state or local law enforcement. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
And you have 5 minutes and 14 seconds.
I hope certainly not to take that long, Your Honor. Your Honor, assuming the court is correct, if it is, if the statute is now in the disjunctive and it was at the time of the offense, then it's still insufficient to find beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Butcher failed to comply with the statute.
Assuming it is in the disjunctive, which do you believe is your stronger argument, that they didn't prove he communicated it to law enforcement or that he communicated it to the victim?
Given what I believe is a paucity of evidence in the record, I think proving the failure to comply with the report to law enforcement would be the most significant, because while the statute requires that he immediately stop and report to the driver or render aid, legislature added the word forthwith when it comes to reporting to law enforcement, which one might assume means at the scene, but if it, for some reason that's not practical, I guess the court would have to interpret what forthwith means, whether it means within an hour, within 24 hours. But the legislature chose to insert that word. So the duty to report to law enforcement is not immediate. The duty to stop is immediate, or as soon as practical there, to render any aid to an injured driver, communicate the information required if the driver of the injured vehicle is somehow incapacitated, to report it to a responsible person, and to, I'm not sure that all the details, but to answer Judge Clement's question, there was a 911 call by Ms. Pegram from the scene of the accident. And she was on the phone with the 911 operator when she testified that Mr. Butcher was banging on her window and yelling. She didn't know what he was saying. 911 operator was telling her to stay, but she was afraid, so she left. Unless the court has any other questions, I'm prepared to rest.
Thank you. And consistent with the court's practice, we'll come down and greet counsel.